Telling Tampa Bay Stories. Members of the community share their stories of growing up in some now forgotten neighborhoods. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper. Telling Tampa Bay Stories is a new project from WUSF News, where our journalists will be visiting some of the region's lesser-known spots to record stories from members of those communities. Recently, we met with some residents of the Carter G. Woodson African American Museum in St. Petersburg to hear their stories of growing up in some now-forgotten neighborhoods. On today's show, we're bringing you some of those stories recorded by WUSF News staff and University of South Florida St. Petersburg journalism students enrolled in the Neighborhood News Bureau course. Their coursework focuses on telling stories from the African American community in South St. Petersburg, known as Midtown. As you'll hear in today's show, people who have spent their lives in Midtown have witnessed quite a few changes over the years for themselves, their families, and their community. We began with Shirley Smith Hayes, who recalled leaving her job in a grocery store deli to work in insurance.
In 1968, my girlfriend was working at Allstate, and she said, you know, you really should come out here and apply for a job. And I was like, oh, they're not going to hire me. So I went out there, and I applied for the job, and they called me back to do the typing test. I was a lousy typist. But I did so well on the test to Nell Carter was her name. She was a human resources person. She took my typing test, and they hired me. I learned to type on a manual typewriter. They had all electric typewriters. I just didn't know how to do it. But on the manual typewriter, I could, Smith Corona, I could kill it, you know. So she took the test, and they hired me. So I was making $68 a week at Webb City, and Allstate offered me $65. And I sat there and I thought about it, $3. I looked at Webb City and I looked at Allstate. And I looked at Webb City and I looked at Allstate. And somewhere in my mind, I thought that I could go somewhere with Allstate and that I probably would not go anywhere with Webb City. I felt like I had reached, because I was at that time I was working in the deli. And I didn't see an opportunity at that time. And I went to Allstate. I took the cut and pay and went to Allstate. Best decision I ever made. It was just one of those things, Webb City. Where was I going? You know? And Allstate had all these jobs, you know, all these departments and positions. So I thought, you know, here's a chance to do something different. So I made that decision, took a cut and pay. When I was working at Allstate, I got promoted to supervisor. And I really wanted my degree. So my boss, his name was James White. He said, if you want to go to school, go, and we'll pay for it. So I went, I needed 18 credits to get my AA degree. So I went and Allstate paid every penny. I don't even know how much it costs. And I graduated with a 3.28 high school, 3.39 in college. One of the biggest problems I find is that the parents, this generation of parents, are not as involved in their children's lives. And the generation before that one was not, because my kids were not as involved as they should have been. And their kids are not as involved as they should have been. Education does not seem to be as important, doesn't seem to have the teeth that it had when I was growing up. My family, I was the first person to graduate from high school in my whole family. I was the first person to graduate from college in my immediate family. I always saw education as a way out because my mom cleaned people's houses for a living. And when I was 12 years old, I started working with her cleaning people's houses. And those people were disrespectful. She had two houses on the beach that she cleaned, and I was in one house and she was in the other one, and the house had terrazzo floors. I don't know if you know anything about terrazzo floors, but I had to sweep and mop those floors, and then you wax them. as just as I finish with the floor, they all come in from the beach and sand all the way. And they said, oh, that's okay. You can just redo them after we leave. I got on that phone. I called my mom. I said, I'm not doing this. I told her what was going on. The next thing I know, she pulled up in the car and she says, you need to pay us because we're not coming back. She stood up for me. She says, we're not coming back. Oh, then they called her. Oh, but Patty, she said, no, we're not going to discuss this. Just pay us and we're out of here. We're not coming back. The point about the education just can't be stressed enough. That's the teeth, that's your bread, your meat, that's your future.
Shirley Smith Hayes has lived in St. Petersburg since 1953. The interview is recorded by USF St. Petersburg student Katie Callahan and WSF's Lisa Peaks. Among those who gathered at the Carter G. Woodson African American Museum in St. Petersburg for the first edition of Telling Tampa Bay Stories was an artist from Tampa. He created sculptures of Elder Jordan, the developer and namesake of the St. Petersburg neighborhood where Woodson Museum is located.
My name is Stalin Martin. I'm an artist. I think it gives individuals a feeling that that they are a part of something. So that's the reason why I do figures, you know, historical figures, because people can connect with individuals and maybe have questions. This one is a sculpture of Carter G. Woodson, the center's name. And the other one is a sculpture of Elder Jordan. Now, this whole area is called Jordan Park after that gentleman. I've done a couple of sculptures of him. I've done one of him younger, and that one is from a picture of his later on. When he was a little older. The basic inspiration for that is that I'm very interested in documenting historical facts of local area, the figures that were important to development of the area. So I have a lot of my art is figures and drawings of individuals. I have one of several of the black golfing pros that started out at Rogers Park in Tampa. I tell you how I got into this. I did a sculpture of an individual that used to be the head pro at Rogers Park. And an individual that knew of that sculpture called me, and he asked me if I would look into doing something for Elder Jordan, because he was a person that was sort of like a pioneer in developing in the black community over here in St. Petersburg. And when I got over here, I looked at the area and was surprised to find that the studio that I work out of is about five blocks from here. That really piqued my interest a little bit more, and that's the reason why I started to work on that sculpture. He was a gentleman that got started in an area and at a time when it was very, very difficult for a black man to develop. But whatever it took and however he did it, he was able to start businesses and own property. The property that he owned was in this area, was something that I wanted to sort of document in terms of an art piece. Since I've retired, I'm focusing more and more on art. And so I look into, say, well, the purpose of art. Down through the generations, I imagine the purpose have been pretty much the same, because you can see art throughout history. The purpose, I think, is kind of lost now on the community. But the way I see it is that the purpose of art is really to establish a connection between individuals and their surrounding. It's the kind of thing that allows an individual to know that they have a stake in a community.
Starlin Martin crafted sculptures that are on display at the Carter G. Woodson African American Museum in St. Petersburg. The interview was recorded by USF St. Petersburg student Marla Korinich and WSF's Lottie Watts.
I am Leonard Waller. I was born and raised right here in St. Petersburg. As a matter of fact, my house was not more than two blocks away from where that highway sits right now. That highway was built, my house had to go, and the highway came when I was a kid, around 11 years old. Well, one thing, the street that highway took was a dirt road. It was a lot of old houses there. We had a giant oak tree that was barely out of the road. I used to play football on that dirt road with my friends, and we had an empty field across the street from the house where we played a little football. But when I got an opportunity to go to Jordan Park, they had fields, two fields as a matter of fact, where we can play a big football game instead of a narrow road football game. And I just thought it was something really great to live in an environment where you could just go out the front door and go in the play lot as a child. So I would venture from time to time from that dirt road to Jordan Park. And I thought it was something, a big deal, you know, to have a real playground like that. And we played some really great games there as children. My dad worked at the Atlantic Coastline Railroad, and that was maybe three or four blocks north of here, right where we're sitting. The railroad trains used to come there for repairs and stuff. His job was to repair or grease them or whatever they do to trains back then. So I have fond memories of him coming home with that grease all over his coveralls and stuff. And my mother worked almost all the time. She was always, she'd tell us when we'd be hungry or something, it's come down to the beauty shop around 12. I'll have made some money by then. And she always used to be doing somebody's hair. And she had this little coat on that they wear, that little white thing. Money sticking out of her pocket. She was very careless with money. I picked up that same habit myself. For years, I never even carried a wallet. I just stuffed it in my pocket. I guess I got that from my mom. And she probably lost more than she made because it falling out of her pocket. But she was well respected as a businesswoman. She later on went to school to be a nurse and changed occupations totally because she just always was ambitious and trying to get more, you know, increase her income and her education. I think my dad kind of envied that because I don't think he could read or write. But I have memories of him reading books and he'd have it upside down or he'd be turning the pages backwards. I'm like, Dad, why are you going backwards with the book? Yeah, I like to do it like that. He would never admit that he couldn't really read. He's just turning the pages, you know. Right now, it's nothing like it was when I was a kid. If I had slept and woken up and saw things the way they are now, I would not recognize it. But it's totally different. I don't know if it means good or bad, but it's just different. See, I saw it as a child. And like I say, dirt roads were everywhere. I think 22nd was a brick road made out of bricks. And it's totally different from the way it was then. They have made several attempts to kind of preserve it, but it's nothing like the way it was when I was coming up. So I still have dreams about that at this point in my life. I still dream from time to time about being at Jordan Elementary, at Jordan Park. They're fun memories, though.
That was Leonard Waller. The interview was recorded by USF St. Petersburg student Daria Perisic and WSF's Mary Shedden.
My name is Elihu Brayboy, and I've been a resident of Midtown in the Midtown area over 50 years. This community has gone through a tremendous amount of loss attributed to integration, because integration also meant the money, the spending power started being spent in other locations. So in the early 80s, a lot of the buildings that are now were boarded up started getting boarded up in the 80s or torn down. And so the community went through a tremendous drought of investment or desire to be there. There was a lack of desire for people to even want to do business on 22nd Street or live near 22nd Street. And it opened the door for drugs and crime and other types of negative behaviors that continued to exist for years. Made it a very unattractive area, which that was the last 35 years. In fact, the buildings that I now have was boarded up for 35 years. But I had a 65-year view of the community, so I didn't have that same feelings about it being a bad area to invest into. I had those other 30 years that some people may not have had the exposure to that led me to believe that we could restore it and bring it back. The city of St. Petersburg mandated that coloreds and Jews could only do business on 22nd Street in the early 20s. And that mandate, by the time of the 50s and the 60s, there was 150 plus black-owned businesses between 5th Avenue South and 18th Avenue South. And I was walking around here during the early 60s, and this was a complete village where my mother worked at the hospital, my father had a business on 7th Avenue, and my surrogate mom had a business on 15th Avenue. And that building, the Meriwether building, was a viable commercial outlet as well as housing. So I would take a statement from Mayor Rick Kreisman when he was campaigning and he looked at the buildings along this particular block. He says 22nd Street has a smile, but it's like a smile with missing teeth. And so right now it's a missing teeth and it doesn't look that nice, you know. But what it looks like with the enhancement, when we would acquire those two vacant lots and build a building similar to the Meriwether building, so that would be 200 square feet of linear feet of commercial spaces, and then the other little small vacant lot also would intend of acquiring it and restoring the enhancement looks of buildings similar to, so that the smile could be perfect from one end of the block to the other.
That was Elihu Brayboy. He and his wife Carolyn own several properties along 22nd Street South in St. Petersburg. The interview was recorded by USF St. Petersburg student Miranda Borchardt and WSF's Lisa Peaks. Coming up,
all of the Pirates, when they came up from Sarasota to play the Cardinals, then we had like all these rollaway beds in the hallways, everywhere, with all the couches were full of people.
We'll bring you more stories recorded at the Carter G. Woodson African American Museum in St. Petersburg. I'm Kirsten Cooper. This is Florida Matters. I'm Kirsten Cooper. This is Florida Matters. We're telling Tampa Bay stories with a focus this week on Midtown, an area in South St. Petersburg. We continue now with more stories recorded by University of South Florida St. Petersburg journalism students and WUSF news staff at the Carter G. Woodson African American Museum.
My name is Paul Allen Stewart. The era when I grew up in St. Petersburg, back during the late 50s, early 60s, I grew up in my grandmother and grandfather's house primarily, and she used to keep, during that time, the black ball players could not stay in the hotels downtown with the white ball players because it was completely segregated. And they had to find lodging for them in the black community. Well, my grandmother, she kept as many ball players as we could at our house and around the corner to our cousin's house as well. But they all ate at her table. And I grew up during that era. All of the Pirates, when they came up from Sarasota to play the Cardinals, then we had like all these rollaway beds in the hallways and everywhere, with all the couches were full of people sleeping, and that's how we did. But I had I had twin beds in my room. And Roberto Clemente used to be my roommate when they came up. And that was during the time, I think he'd already won Most Valuable Player, and it was just exciting because I knew who they were, but things like, for instance, like I say, when I watched Frank Robinson's El Dorado and the Corvette in the afternoon, well, I had never known any other black man to have a Corvette before. But it was things like that I experienced with them. And there was one guy, I can't call his name right now, but he had, all he did, he bought jazz albums every week. And he maintained such a collection that he accumulated during the spring training. And he left half of them with me when he got ready to go, because I would listen to music with him a lot too. When he'd get a new album, I'd sit and listen it with him. In the room, he had the record player and he would listen to the albums. And we do things like that. We were just, like I say, they were like I had a bunch of older brothers in the house. That's how they were.
Can you talk about where the white ball players would stay in St. Pete? And can you also talk about when did segregation at hotels end? And did that mean the end for the players staying at your grandparents' house?
Yes, it did. But it was like, I'm trying to think what hotel they stayed in downtown. I used to know what hotel they stayed in a lot of times. But by the time the era ended, I was, I guess, in high school or so. And it was a time when I guess my grandmother was getting a little bit older anyway, and it was time for her to stop cooking those big meals like that and having all the work that she had to do, you know, during that time. So it was like the era ended right on time for her aging, and it was like that. But I just remember one day there were no ball players anymore for spring training.
And were you sad on that?
No, because by then I was about high school, like getting ready to go to college, and you know, and that was then.
That was Paul Stewart. The interview was recorded by USF St. Petersburg students David Stoner and Miranda Borchardt and WSF's Lottie Watts. Now we'll meet a brother and sister who grew up in the neighborhood where Tropicana Field now sits.
My name is Fred Frederick. I am a native of St. Petersburg, but I now reside in Chicago, Illinois.
I am Ruby King Shannon, a native of St. Petersburg, and I'm still residing here in St. Petersburg, some 74 and three-quarter years.
We're brother and sister.
Brother and sister. Mm-hmm. We moved from where I was born in the gas plant area over to 40 quarters.
That's where I
and
was born.
And then we moved.
And I'd like to inject right there, because someone asked me recently why it was called 40 quarters. And doing research a few years back, I found that the gentleman who owned all the houses in 40 quarters, we only paid $10 in rent a week. So $10 is 40 quarters. And that was the history of the area that we lived in and grew up at 545 11th Street South. All of that area has been, it's no longer, because the dome is there now. Tropicana Field.
We weren't forced out. We just moved. My parents moved us to a larger place. We moved into another home. We've never lived in projects. We've never lived in half-number homes. When we moved on 14th Avenue, my mom and dad both were employed. And I guess we were poor and didn't know we were poor. And I say that because we had all of the necessities. We never went hungry. My father had a car. Whatever we needed, we always had. Mm-hmm. Well, we were the first ones to get a TV in the community at that time. And my mom, when she'd come home from work, the living room was full of kids, because she loved a community. We were just a loving family. We knit it together, you know. And everybody looked after everybody's children during those days. That's the way it was. So when they came home from work, they had to step over to the
get in the house because we were laying on the floor watching television.
To do what they had to do to fix dinner for us and what have you. I want to make you laugh. I just thought about something. Right in the area where Campbell Park School is, that was a cane field. Sugar cane.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And the man's name who owned that property name was Jim Walker. Remember him?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Walker.
And he had a big scarecrow at the beginning. Yeah. Because the kids would go in and steal the sugar cane. So that was the way that he would keep us out. And one day, one of my girlfriends said, well, let's go and get us a stalk of cane. And we didn't see Jim Walker sitting by the scarecrow. And we were trying to get in there to get us a stalk of cane free. And he shot the gun up in the air. Pop!
He thought it was a scarecrow.
Never tried that
but
again.
See, this is something Never else that you that don't again. See anymore is of stalks of cane growing. We have them growing all around the neighborhoods and stalks of cane. You know, sugar cane.
Yeah, that whole area, he had stalks of sugar cane there.
And mangoes, we would just go and pick them off the trees. You don't see too many of those anymore. So
now all those things extinct, they're going away.
Ruby King Shannon and her brother, Fred Frederick. The interview was recorded by USF St. Petersburg student Laura Mulrooney and WUSF's Lottie Watts. That's it for today's show. Stories were recorded by University of South Florida St. Petersburg journalism students enrolled in the Neighborhood News Bureau course with assistance from WUSF's Daylena Miller, Lisa Peaks, Mary Shedden, and Lottie Watts. Special thanks to Neighborhood News Bureau professor Bernardo Mata and the Carter G. Woodson African American Museum in St. Petersburg, where stories for today's show were recorded. On an upcoming show, we're gathering a panel to discuss how trade affects jobs in various sectors across Florida, and we want to know how trade policy has impacted your own personal economy. How have trade deals affected you? And will trade policy influence whom you vote for in the presidential election? Leave us a voicemail at 813-974-8652 or send an email to floridamatters@wusf.org. Again, the number, 813-974-8652. If you missed that, just visit wusfnews.org and click on the Florida Matters link. Florida Matters is produced by Lottie Watts. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.